So it is possible there is a correlation between AGP, an attraction to the presenting as a sexual, as a different sex, and fervent trans ideology.
Yeah, but you see, the way I dress now is clearly not getting a kick out of wearing a sweater.
Now you call yourself a trans person, yeah, who's male.
But other people can't let go of the idea that all trans people are AGP perverts or whatever, to the point where I'm wearing exactly the same clothes.
But what if it's not that?
2 weeks ago, and I was told I was in full fetish gear.
Should trans women be allowed in female changing rooms?
Define the changing room. Where does a trans woman change?
You said you are male. So why would you go in a woman's changing room?
Okay, the alternative is I go in a men's changing room and I now have D-cup breasts.
Do you miss your willy?
No, God no.
Are you happy with what's there?
Yeah, clitoris is an upgrade.
You don't seem that sure though.
Wait.
You sort of looked into the distance longingly. let me ask you this, right? Controversial question. Do you think that you pass?
Of course not.
Do you or did you get any kind of sexual kick out of presenting as a woman? Welcome to another episode of Heretics. It's time for a debate because I finally managed to get somebody from the other side of the trans ideology debate. It's Katie John Went. Where does she go? No, that's Katie's name. Now, I don't have a strong opinion about the pronoun thing. I'm a linguist. I like all the languages and things. And I just don't really... Well, I don't. It's not that I don't care, because I know a lot of people have some arguments as to why it's important not to call people the thing that they're not. And other people think it's important to call them the thing they're not. I'm just trying to say Katie instead of having to go down that route. Maybe that's cowardly, or maybe I'm just not smart enough to figure out what the right answer is. So, as many of you know, I'm gender critical. That means that, you know, I know that a man can't be a woman can't be a man, no matter how much they want to, no matter how much a certain kind of fish can do it, or no matter how much we know that people who are intersex exist. None of this has any bearing on being able to change one's sex. And then a lot of people say, oh, but gender, and I have seen no empirical evidence for any reason to believe that gender is a separate thing from sex. It appears to be, whenever I break it down, and I would love for someone to get in touch with me and explain it better, but it appears to be just gender traits or personality traits that we associate with men or women, and people can sort of identify based on those. And I just think, well, that's all well and good, but you're still a man, you're still a woman, and you just have these personality traits, which is wonderful. At the same time, the more I've sort of gone into this rabbit hole, delved into the rabbit hole, I've met a lot of people who are gender critical like me, who really are go very far, and who, if you don't do exactly as they want in terms of pronouns, and you don't shout at trans people and that kind of thing, that they say you're a traitor, and it's this whole big purity spiral that has already felled the likes of Andrew Doyle and Helen Pluckrose, who are intellectual heroes of mine, who are nuanced and therefore get it in the neck from both sides. So that's horrible, and I think we always have to remember the human. Katie John Went is just a lot of fun, really interesting, quite fiery and smart and intelligent. And Katie had the courage to come down to the studio, knowing that I'd done all these episodes calling out a lot of the trans thing. And I had a great time with Katie. I think Katie's wonderful. I don't think Katie's going around trying to mess around with your kids or do anything like that. And I think most trans people are probably, what do I know? Probably like Katie, and it's all well and good. However, there are issues with Katie's ideology, in my opinion, which is why I push back on lots of stuff in a smiley way, because I could tell that Katie has that kind of humour and open-mindedness where we were able to do that. So hopefully, and I'm arrogant to even suggest this, we've produced something that's fairly unique on the internet and on podcasts today, which is a fairly fiery debate where we don't misrepresent the thoughts of the other, and we don't get all leery with each other, and we remain friendly. I imagine I'll get it in the neck from both sides, but I imagine the vast majority of you, the sort of silent majority, might actually really enjoy this. And I push a fair bit about AGP just because I'm interested in that. That's autogynephilia, which is this thing where, you know, men get off on the idea of presenting as women. And that in itself is no problem. People have fetishes, but it is a problem if that means you want access to the women's locker room because you're enjoying, you know what I mean. And nobody knows the percentage of people. It might just be 0.1% of trans people who have that. It could be 100%. What do we know? Who knows anything? Hope you enjoy this episode. Please do share it around. Give it to people. We do, I don't know if we did for this episode actually. How useless is that? But just go to andrewgold.locals.com. I put the extra bonus video bits there and enjoy the episode. Oh, and follow Katie John Went on Twitter and all that. Get a trans woman on, they said. Everybody's saying, get a trans woman on. I'm sure now that I do, everyone's going to be angry at me, but this is how it is. I asked Katie Montgomery. She said no, or that she'd think about it, whatever. Katie John Went politely and kindly said that they, she, he would come on. Are trans women literally women, Katie?
No. Shall I go now? Is that it? We're done.
That's it.
Yeah. Nobody else could give a straight answer, can they? Especially politicians.
They're not women. Okay, what are you? What are you?
I was born male. Okay. Although the doctors took an hour to work it out, but ultimately that's another story. Okay. But yeah, you can't be a trans woman unless you were born a man. It's obvious. Yeah. You cannot transition unless you started somewhere, even if your transitional journey is to something else. And that something else isn't changing sex. It's changing a gender expression, a gender identity, and a gender respect, shall we call it, in the eyes of the law. But that's what it is. It's kind of, we will take you as this, but you are not literally this. And that's been one of the biggest issues. People are wanting to replace sex with gender with sex, and yet they're two separate things. And some people say gender doesn't exist, and some people say sex doesn't matter, obviously. Plenty of people say sex does matter now.
What would you say to people who consider it maybe sexist to change to a gender? Because what is that? What is a woman's gender if not long hair and long nails?
Oh, let's get rid of mine quickly, shall we?
Yes.
Oh, I'll be told off for conforming to stereotypes. Yeah. Oh dear, I forgot to wear the makeup today. Don't have any. What is gender? I mean, gender is kind of as much a theory as anything else. It's been described as the kind of the means of the oppression on women, but it's upon the nature of their ownership of being a sex and at the hands of patriarchy and men typically. So gender has previously been described as an oppression. And in the last couple of decades, it's been regarded far more as an expression. Mm. And that when
what is that expression? If not long hair and long nails, what is that expression as being a woman?
Well, I mean, I guess I grew up in the, I'm 57 nearly, so I grew up in the 80s music scene, New Romantics and things like that, but also late 70s rock, when the guys wore makeup and blousy shirts, and the gender expression of guys was long hair, blouses, nails, and the guys did more makeup than women in the 70s and 80s in the music scene. Anyway,
I wore eyeliner. Yeah. When I used to play guitar, and I loved karaoke, and so I'd put a bit of the Green Day, the Killers, that,
yeah,
kind
love
of
Green
thing.
Day. But yeah, I mean, so I think in those days, there were the gender fluidity of then was not an identity. And I think that's what's changed. We now have identities, whereas then we had gender play, gender fluidity, everyone from Bowie to Jagger, you know, expressing themselves in different ways, but they didn't give themselves an identity as a result of it. Some might playfully give themselves a name. Hey, this is me as Mandy or whatever. But it was tongue-in-cheek, it was expressive, it was gender rebellion. And if anything, it was rebellion against the stereotypes, in the same way that women who went with short hair and went butch or tomboy, irrespective of sexual identity, that was the gender rebellion for them.
Yeah.
But when the men rebelled in the same way, there's a big difference between being able to do it in the pop and rock scene, because male stereotypes were quite conformist. I went to an all-male public school, which wasn't a fantastically good fun idea.
For non-Brits, that means a posh
school.
Not a state.
Yeah, public doesn't mean free in the UK. Public means expensive.
I went to one as well. Yes. I went to a public school as well.
Are you going to out yourself and say which one?
Merchant Taylors.
Yeah, I used to run against you. I went to St Albans.
St Albans, ah, oh, boo.
Yeah, I know, yeah. We used to do cross country together then.
Yeah, not the only cross stuff you did, sorry.
Yeah, all the sports.
On. Yes.
I obviously opted out of team sports as fast as possible. Hated the idea of sharing a shower room with a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
So I understand why people don't want to share shower rooms with anyone of a different gender, sex, or anyone else at all, to be honest. But so I think that's where kind of some of this kind of gender expression rebellion kind of became identity stuff. So living, and that's why I'm kind of what some people call old school trans.
It gets into the language of true trans and all kinds of other things as well. And you do get, and we even discussed this phrase, you know, hasn't the gender identity movement, trans rights activists ruined it for the rest of us old school trans? And there is a little bit of that argument about that the kind of the newer movement has made life harder for old school transsexuals
There were stats around that, weren't there? That's a general support for trans as it is has gone down.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at, for example, the social attitude surveys. I think the last one was 21 and before that, or 22, and the last one before that was 2017. And it's gone down from around, depending on which question you ask and which group you ask, something of the order of 55% to 70% of people, including, and some of these questions were directed specifically to women, but generally the population said, yeah, we're okay with trans. And now it's more like in the 40 to 55 mark. So in other words, it's gone down 15% as you know, but actually about 20% in terms of loss of people's comfort level with it. And maybe, and has that been because there's been too big an ask? The current trans movements, have they had an ask too far with Gender Recognition Act 2.0 or whatever else, the idea of self-ID? I think self-ID has been badly handled, missold, and Scotland has gone too far. One irony is the fact that actually old school transsexuals, in order to transition, you had to do self-ID. In other words, you were not allowed to transition unless you self-ID'd for 2 years first. We've always had self-ID. People like April Ashley, who transitioned in the 50s, got a female passport in the 1950s before there was ever a gender recognition certificate or getting two psychiatrists to sign off on it.
That doesn't mean it was right because
it doesn't mean it was right. But it meant that order for a person who actually presented in a very stereotypical 1950s, 60s, 70s way woman, for her to travel safely through, you know, airports and countries, she got a female passport was given to her. It was deemed this is the best outcome, the best way of keeping you safe and respecting you as a British citizen when traveling abroad. And half the things we do in life are compromises. Half the things we do in life are adjustments, are ways in which we can coexist. We already kind of compromise and coexist even within the Equality Act between religions and sexuality, between any two religions. Yeah. You can pick any two or even one to have a fight. They have fights among themselves. Yeah, I mean, even within the Equality Act, you've got the idea that religions have to coexist with sexuality and any two religions have to coexist with each other. You only have to jump to a Middle East story at the moment or to India, you know, to realize that any two religions will fight with each other and any one religion will have fights within itself. You know, Sunni and Shia in the Middle East that can fight on their own. They don't need to start a fight with Israel or anyone else. Yeah. So in that sense, we're already doing accommodations in life. We don't have to agree to have a civic life where we, you know, we can get on with our neighbor. But I think one of the things we've got now, though, is this polarized extremism of ideologies and viewpoints that says, I'm right, you're wrong. And if you're wrong, I'm not even, can't even live near you, can't even talk to you, can't even respect you. Whereas before, I guess the phrase, I've got a great old friend, actually, who's now what you would call an ex-gay person, ended up in North Carolina and going through conversion therapy as a Christian. And there he's now an ex-gay because Christian faith was more important to him than being gay. And so he went through conversion therapy, essentially. I went through conversion therapy. I had the transgender demon cast out of me and it came back. Because I was a former fundamentalist Christian. But I'm as much a gender atheist as a Christian atheist now.
But the thing is, we have a separation between sort of religion, and I think that's important. I'm an atheist myself, and I think no religion. And I see, and I think you might see some of this trans ideology, some parts of it, as quite religious itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's within, I think, but actually, I mean, it's interesting that actually gender critical women actually call trans a cult, and actually trans activists call gender critical a cult. When each side calls each other a cult and each side thinks each other is fundamentalist, that each side use the word fascist of each other, it becomes interesting. And because I sit in the middle, which to me is my new heresy, sitting in the middle and disagreeing with both, or at least able to understand both, and, you know, kind of moderation to me is the new heresy, because everyone actually is in these idealistic camps.
That's true.
But I think that's one of the differences I'm trying to, I think, explain, that we've now very much got a polarized world. Instead of gradually, you'd have thought by 2020 something, we'd be moving towards much more kind of coexistence around stuff. Instead, pick a subject, you know, whether it was COVID, whether it's climate change, whether it's politics, whether it's trans, whether it's the Middle East, they're incredibly polarized. Instead of, and this is, I think, the example I'm trying to give of this gay friend and I was he used to talk about him being, you know, back in the day when he was the only gay in the village. And I said, well, if you're the only gay in the village, and he was Welsh, I said, well, I'm the only tranny in the valley. And, you know, and when it was one person in the village turned a blind eye.
Yes.
And what we used to call tolerance, not in the Karl Popper sense, but tolerance to young trans activists is an evil word. They say, we don't want tolerance. We want acceptance. We want inclusion. We want equality. Tolerance is like half-hearted, you know. And but to me, tolerance is particularly British, but also particularly modern. It's how we muddle along without having to agree. And I think what we've lost now is tolerance. And we've become intolerant of others to the point, and we're intolerant even within groups. Mm. And, you know,
yes.
When I get involved with, gender critical women, the trans camp kind of cancel me, and then the what I would say the more hardline gender critical women cancel me, and then cancel the gender critical women that spoke to me, and they fall upon each other upon their own side. And so there's an intolerance even within a group towards anyone. It's like purity policing within either extreme.
That's true. I think that thing about it can be difficult sometimes when we're in the middle and it's like, okay, well, these people seem really aggressive and angry on one side, they're aggressive and angry, and they're calling them a cult. Sometimes it can be too easy for us to say, okay, well, that means that if they're both calling each other a cult, the middle ground's the right place. Scientology, they call people outside of Scientology, they say they're in a cult. But we know that Scientology is the cult. So sometimes we do have to say, okay, which one is engaging in more magical thinking? And that's when just where I am right now, the trans ideology, which is not where you are. I'm talking about the people on the other side of you who are saying trans women are women. The UN trans lesbians are lesbians.
Yeah, I mean, go back 6-12 years, I might have said that. Okay. I mean, the reason why my own language continues to evolve, my ideas continue to evolve, because I do believe in debate and have always believed in debate. I thought the whole no debate thing was a big mistake.
What brought you down from trans women are women?
At a magical thinking versus scientific biological reality, I'd never kind of gone down saying that black is white, you know, never gone down that line. But I, in the language of 6 to 12, 18 years ago, because I've been out 17, 18 years now. So over that period, I've seen the language change. I've seen what I would call a tolerance and accommodation. We will treat you as if you were a woman. Mm. Gradually becomes to, oh no, we're gathering the evidence that there is there are male brains, there are female brains, and there are trans brains. Netherlands particularly does a lot of studies in the brains around this, demonstrating a few factors that could say one thing or another. But I actually go to I read a lot of neuroscience, been to a few neuroscience lectures, and I've seen neuroscientists fight each other to say there is a female brain, there is a male brain, and other people saying, no, there's no such thing. There is a brain.
Yeah.
And yes, it's subject to external conditions, they're malleable, etc. And there is no difference between a male and a female brain. That's not strictly true, because brains are subject to hormones, amongst other things. Mm. And brains of men are subject to more testosterone, so you get an androgenization of the brain. Do trans women maybe have less androgenization of their brain? Does their brain sit somewhere in between the two? But no, I don't believe that there's a lady brain trapped in a male body, or vice versa. But we've been through lots of language shifts the last 20 years, and I guess there was a tendency from around 2011 onwards that I began to start questioning things. I remained a trans activist, not the way it's kind of perhaps seen now, and they wouldn't probably have me on any of the same kind of activism bandwagons now. But I was definitely kind of a trans advocate, should we call it, more than a trans activist. And I was supporting the Equality Act of 2010. My next door neighbor, bar one, is Linda Bellos, who was very big on the Equality Act. And we've had debates about the Equality Act and trans for about a dozen years. And we always found everything on what is the law, what are human rights? And in that sense, this whole kind of, again, you know, the idea, what rights do trans people not have? Well, we all have human rights, and actually trans people do have rights in the Equality Act, but so do women, and so do religious groups. And so now, under kind of case law, do gender critical views have protections? But yeah, actually, within the Equality Act, it's transition that's protected. It's not necessarily the notion of being trans, it's the act of transitioning. And that's what's protected. No age has been attached to it, which has thrown the government into a bit of a quandary about what can you do with trans kids in schools. Or I get in trouble for saying trans kids. What I mean by that is children who are questioning their gender.
Sure.
again, then people are jumping on language all of the time rather than actually trying to say, what are you actually trying to say? They go, you just said that.
Hey, it's Andrew. If you're enjoying Heretics, there's another podcast I want to recommend to you, especially if climate change, global conflicts, and an upcoming election are making you feel like we're on the brink of disaster. What Could Go Right is hosted by Progress Network founder Zachary Carabel and executive director Emma Varvalukas. On What Could Go Right, the hosts sit down with expert guests to discuss the world's most pressing issues without resorting to pessimism or despair that we hear so often. Instead, they look back at how far society has come and look forward at what it will take to achieve an even brighter future. Is progress on the way? They may not have all the answers, but on What Could Go Right, they're asking the key questions. Tune in to hear interviews with upcoming guests like writer Coleman Hughes, CNN host Fareed Zakaria, and economist Alison Schrager. If you're looking for a weekly dose of optimistic ideas from smart people, join them every Wednesday on What Could Go Right, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it is a minefield. And you go through your head, and I now go, okay, you've said children who want to change gender, and I've gone, okay.
Well, I said children who are questioning their gender. I didn't say change, because again, yeah. But that's what I mean.
But then I say okay, and then that gets clipped, and it goes, Andrew exactly. Agrees that children want to...
Well, no, I was at this recent event in Brighton at Sister Salon, which started out as not as a single-sex event, and then Sister Salon put it on and opened it up to people on that date, because it was a replacement event, because the first event got cancelled, which had been put on by Brighton Skeptics in the pub.
Right.
But what I actually said something there, and I used the word trans kids, and I use that as a shortcut for teenagers who are questioning their gender, because that's a bit more of a mouthful. And this woman came up to me and said, I actually thought what you said was okay, Katie, but you said this word trans kids. There's no such thing as a trans kid. And I said, well, what I mean by that? And she said, oh, okay, I get you now, but you really shouldn't use that phrase. And this goes back to what I was saying. I keep learning. Mm. And I therefore keep changing my position. And yet there's
always going to be a problem, though. You're not going to please everyone.
No. And there's a video of me saying something 12 years ago going around Twitter at the moment, which people are having fun with, clipped from a documentary made about me 12 years ago. And I said something 12 years ago, which I probably wouldn't say now. Mm-hmm. And I said something 2 years ago I wouldn't say now. And even what I'm saying now, I'd probably change my mind in a year's time, because I'm continually open to more information and to what makes this best accommodation, which goes back to this argument for tolerance. What are we willing to accept so that we all get on?
Yeah,
and we
yeah.
do that already around faiths that don't believe in abortion, that don't believe in homosexuality, and food rules or whatever it might be. We make accommodations and we don't have to agree with them.
Yeah.
We allow Scientologists to exist, etc.
We do. We don't allow them to change our current laws, though.
Yes.
You know, they wouldn't be allowed into a changing room of whatever it might be.
Yeah.
You know, that's the issue here.
But the thing is, the laws have already changed to be inclusive of trans. The question, and what people are asking for, though, is to change. We've got the Gender Recognition Act of 2004.
What does it mean? Like, brief, what's the outline?
Well, the main purpose of the GRA of 2004, in part, was one, it was slightly foisted upon us by some legislation and some cases that were going through the EU. And it was based around marriage issues in the main. Because otherwise, if you have people who transitioned within a marriage, you would end up having gay marriage by the back door. Because you can't, if one person transitioned and did an April Ashley and got a female sex passport and remained married and all the rest of it, and suddenly, hold on, if you're female and you're married to him, then actually you're a same-sex marriage, but we haven't got same-sex marriage laws.
Amazing.
So,
actually,
the GRA enabled you to transition your sex and also transition out of your marriage as well, and also to get your birth certificate changed so that you could get your degree certificate changed, because it would be a nightmare getting a job and then having to produce your degree certificate, and that's in a different name and a different gender. So some of it was a legal fudge, which is why I've called it awkward words in the past. It was imperfect law, and it has become outdated and it needs an update. And then so the trans side said it needs an update to self-ID, and the gender critical side is saying it needs an update to not exist at all. So I do agree it needs an update, but where that's going to be is, I think it's impossible to remove it entirely. The Equality Act supersedes it in many respects, because now it's transition that is a protected characteristic, whether you use the GRA at all. I do not have a gender recognition certificate. I could get one instantly. I've got a letter that says I can get one. But it's pointless, because no one needs it.
Should trans women be allowed in female changing rooms?
Do you define the changing room? Where does a trans woman change? And what is a, and okay, let's not forget the word
it's
trans
difficult
woman.
The other way. Where does trans man?
Yeah. Where does someone who has transitioned change? And I'm defining transition at this point, not socially, but physically. Where does someone who is physically, so I have
cut
physically,
the willy off.
Yeah. I've.
Have you cut your willy off?
It's not technically cut off. It's inverted. But yes, I did.
Oh, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, you keep it. How you get a neo clitoris by turning the tip of the willy into.
Do you miss your willy? Do you mind me being a bit facetious?
No, I can. You can say anything.
Do you miss your willy?
No, God no.
Are you happy with what's there?
Yeah, clitoris is an upgrade.
You don't seem that sure though.
When
you sort of now? Looked to the into the distance longingly.
No, that's like it's not a poker tell. I have no wistful missings of it. I mean. So that's not an issue for me. And I actually didn't have a conventional operation. I had what's called a vaginoplasty, not a... I had a labioplasty, not a vaginoplasty.
Okay.
So they didn't create a vagina.
Okay.
So no one...
It's just the
no one who possesses a willy can have sex with me.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll bear that in mind as I go about my day.
But they give you a functioning clitoris because they take the tip of the penis and they convert
it. Does it work well?
It works better than the older
clitoris. Shut up.
Oh, hell yeah.
I don't believe that.
Yeah, if you have a headache, it's best place to go. It's better
so
than
that works, and you can orgasm.
It surprised me too.
Well, that's good. I imagine I've heard.
There's
that.
No guarantee.
A lot of people, it doesn't go well.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot, of, and I know, and this is one of the things that's sometimes hushed under the carpet for a lot of people that have corrective surgeries. My own surgeon actually came up when we were in Brighton at the Sisters Salon event. Mr. Bellringer, awkward name for a surgeon. Who does
oh my God!
Things, yes. it's like a stand-up routine already.
Yeah.
But anyway, Mr. Bellringer had actually he is a doctor. It's just that you call surgeons Mr. But Bellringer had actually raised concerns at Tavistock as well. And he said, look, there are some issues. People are not being told all of the issues. And he was very honest with me, perhaps because I had previously been married to a doctor. So he thought, can't pull the wool over your eyes. I asked good questions. And I said, look, these are my concerns. He said, these are valid concerns. And he said, look, have you thought about this? He said, like 50 years from now, there's going to be old people's homes filled with like aging transsexuals who may have dementia. And are going to need their care worker to help them. Because one dilemma is if you have the vaginoplasty and you don't actively keep it active, whether that's through a dilator or through active regular sex, there's a potential for it to close up because your body treats it as a wound. Yeah. You're making a hole where there wasn't a hole. So I said, okay, I don't want any of that. I want the low maintenance version. And I'm not interested in a sexual life. So therefore, I'm not interested in anything. He said, well, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to make your clitoris or not? I said, I really don't care. I said, knock yourself out.
Have fun. Good night.
Yeah. And so I was quite surprised to find later on, many months later, it worked. That wasn't the way I did it.
I want to pull up just on something you said, that he didn't pull the wool over your eyes because you were married to a doctor, did you say? The suggestion being these doctors who are presumably paid to do these procedures often will try to trick.
I don't think anyone's tricking. I don't want to see that language be seen like that word. But I think there has been this huge and vast number and increase in those asking and requesting the services has put them under incredible time and money pressure.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of went through it in an era where, as I say, you had to do this 2 years self-ID before you were even considered to be entering the system before you were even able to then potentially get hormones, which took another year, at least several appointments. You had proper psychiatric assessments. You often had 3 months therapy. You had to fill out 30 pages of quite a lot of questions. And they were really quite thorough. And my own psychiatrist at the time, who was actually my ex-wife's boss, actually said, 50% of the people who come through the system then actually drop out before they go any further. So there was actually a loss of 50% not continuing. The hoops you had to jump through were quite rigorous. And then in 2011, as I say, which is when my own transgender skepticism, something started, because in 2011, there was a move to depathologize being trans, to depathologize gender dysphoria or gender identity disorder, as it was called back then. And the idea with that was that, it will no longer be a psychiatric condition. And actually, in the International Classification of Diseases, I think we're ICD-12 now, it is no longer considered a psychiatric condition. It's just now grouped under sexual health or something. But 10 years ago, 20 years ago, it was considered a psychiatric condition. And there's a move. And the first country to depathologize it, I think, was Argentina in 2012. And now it's a dozen countries around the world have actually removed it from being a psychiatric condition. You can have transition kind of no questions asked.
But it is a psychiatric condition.
Yeah, it is. And for me, it is. I will absolutely say it is a psychiatric
condition. Psychiatric condition doesn't even have to have negative connotations.
No.
It is something to do with your psyche. It is a condition that leads you to believe you are or should be of the...
You can have, not gender dysphoria, but body dysmorphia. You can have psychological distress because your breasts are of uneven sizes. A previous neighbor of mine, had her breasts equalized in size and shape because it was causing her distress, the fact that they were different.
What is in where you have breasts?
What is there?
Yes.
Hormones that grew breasts.
So that is, it was not all hard or anything?
It's actual breast tissue. Men have breast tissue. That's why you can get breast cancer as well. A little bit less likely.
Another thing to worry about. Thank you.
I can still get prostate cancer. A little less likely now because estrogen is one of the treatments for it. So, so it's already preventative.
So your breasts just started. You haven't had any plastic?
No, I had nothing in there.
Because they're quite rambunctious.
They're what people call a
You've got some stuff in there.
No, there's nothing in there. There's a D cup.
Okay. And
But they grew through hormones. But one of the reasons they probably grew disproportionately compared to some other trans women, is the fact that I had low testosterone.
I see.
I've always had this low androgen, low testosterone condition. That's why I didn't get a male puberty.
Some women are flat.
Yes, I won't. My sister and I have the same genetics, theoretically, but she'll probably hate me for saying that. She hasn't seen this video, but I think she's got A cup breasts.
Let me ask you this, right? Controversial question. Do you think that you pass?
Of course not.
Okay.
But occasionally, did I ever try to pass? No, because I don't change my voice, for starters.
Yeah.
Open big mouth, end of passing, even if I did pass. That said, Linda Bellos and I were at a bar recently, and the barman said to Linda Bellos, "What can I get you to drink, sir?" And then turned to me, "What can I get you to drink, ma'am?" But neither of us had spoken. But Linda was clocked as male, and I was clocked as female, visually.
Okay.
Blind barman, you could say, whatever. But Linda gets misgendered on a regular basis. She says sometimes five times a day, but she gets called sir all the time.
Okay.
And she won't mind probably me saying that she's got breasts bigger than mine. And yet that's the last thing people notice about her. They notice the short cropped haircut, the masculine suits, her poise, her standing, whatever it might be. People have tells around gender. 90% of people, 95% of people, you can clock their gender. Yes. But then every now and then there's someone you think, well, I'm not sure entirely. Until something else happens, they move. And you think, what am I looking for now? Again, stereotypes, long hair or not. But am I looking at hips? Am I looking at size? Am I looking at whatever it might be? I remember being on an aircraft and the stewardess coming up from behind. And if you see from behind long hair,
sure.
Actually, I haven't got, don't get one earring in, but I had another earring in, long hair from behind and curvature of the breast. They're coming up from behind and they say, "What can I get you to drink, madam?"
What does it do to you? What does it feel like to hear that?
Okay, there's a little bit of joy of inclusion maybe sometimes when I hear that, but actually I've stopped caring now because the very next thing I said to her is, "I'll have a whiskey, please." And she said, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry, sir." And I go, no, you were right the first time.
Oh,
and then she goes,
God.
"Oh, I'm confused." I said, no, have you looked at me? I'm the confused one. So, I've learned to realize that you can actually, play with gender. That's not the same thing as the sex issue, the sex-based rights and all the rest of it. But to me, there's a little bit of trying to bring back some of this 20, 30 years ago gender rebellion rather than ideological fighting. What happened to gender euphoria rather than dysphoria?
I see. I think that's a lovely idea, actually. And I like the sort of punk idea. I do think that we, and I count myself among us on the gender critical side, can, like in any sort of tribe, lose track of the human, of the individual liberty, and the idea. And I know like Helen Pluckrose is really good with this kind of thing. I really like her, the idea, and she gets a lot of criticism, but that, look, if it's not affecting people, if it's not,
if it's not harming someone else.
Since when do we become the people who we saw ourselves as these kind of lefty liberals years ago, or like the individual liberty? Since when do we become these people going, "Oh, he's got a fetish, I'm not happy about that"? You know, as long as it doesn't affect other people. The issue is, of course, it is on some levels affecting people with changing rooms. I don't know what.
Yeah,
and
I think we should get back to that because it might be seen that I haven't answered that question.
Okay.
You just had a nice segue. I think if you start talking sport, prisons, changing rooms, rape refuges, three out of four of them, I've got a very clear line that I'm on the gender critical side.
Okay.
If you can pick and select sound bites of me from 2 to 6, 10 years ago, and you'll find me having a different opinion. And I spent some time working in the prison sector, so I've been to about 50 UK prisons, and people in prisons would often come and ask me, "Katie, we've got some trans people. Do you know what we should do with them?" Because this was before they had rules about what they should do with them. And I said, "Well, what are you doing with them now? That seems to work. Carry on." But that was a fudge. We fudged for many years until they came up with these PSIs, prison service instructions, to tell the governors what to do. And then when they brought those PSIs, those rules in, they actually, again, similarly actually to the Equality Act with the transgender protections, transitioning protections, people erred on the side of inclusion, erred on the side of caution, erred on the side of kindness. And
in what sense?
Well, in the sense that the Equality Act always had room for exception and exemption. And people actually went down the be kind side and inclusion over exemption.
Of trans people.
Of trans people, yes.
But that's not kind to a young woman who feels vulnerable. And
But that was the bit, as I said, that's the bit that had been forgotten.
I see.
And I think that's why the gender critical debate has been it's been a very unhealthy debate in many respects, but it's a healthy need for discussion, because we have to, in certain situations, we have to reset the balance, and we have to rebalance, therefore, the idea that there are competing groups here, and it's not like giving women the vote and men losing 50% of their kind of democratic equity. You know, when you're giving trans people access, you are impacting women, and the women aren't like men with the vote who are losing a bit of power. They're women who had to fight to get what they got, fight to get women's sports, to fight to get single-sex spaces. And this is where I think there's been a lack of empathy from some trans activists to recognize that women fought to get what they want, and now you just want to identify into that space,
especially that space might be. I think that's a very astute point, and especially given it was men that were sort of oppressing those women and taking those rights away. And then on the gender critical side, we would say it's still men who are trying to take
those
rights.
Obviously, we're only talking in most of the gender critical argument. There's actually two completely different arguments about the gender critical argument against men becoming women, people, or Tim's trans identifying men, men who identify as trans. I'm actually identify as trans. You know, you said, let's get a trans woman on. I actually don't identify as a trans woman.
Interesting.
I would have done 2018.
Okay.
Now I would say I'm a trans person.
Trans person.
And, you know, I often get introduced on TV or radio or even to a friend. This is Katie, my trans friend, or this is Katie, she's a trans woman, or this is my female friend, Katie. I don't correct people. That is my choice. So gender critical people will say, you should every time say, no, but I'm a man. You should out yourself. Then, of course they know who I am. Of course they know I'm male. There's no pretend in that sense. I'm not pretending. But if somebody wants to include me, I'm not going to exclude myself.
Although I understand that.
But that's a politeness in both senses, because otherwise you're almost embarrassing your friend as well. The majority of my friends are more trans, and the majority of my female friends are more trans inclusive than I am. In that sense.
I'm sure. They're less knowledgeable though as well.
Yeah, but I debate with them till I'm blue in sooth. But I think this goes back to the fact that there are different waves of feminism. You know, we're on wave four, but if you also just Google the word feminism, you'll find my last count, there's 72 of them. And that's just the ones that I could enumerate. Okay. So when someone says they're a feminist to me, I go, which one?
Yeah.
Because what do you mean by that? Because you ask the average student age feminist, they would say absolutely trans women are women, and absolutely our intersectional feminism, and Kimberly Crenshaw coined the phrase intersectional in that sense, and she includes trans in that. So, but other feminists don't. So which is the true feminist?
Yeah. Is the true trans?
Well, exactly. You get the younger feminists saying actually that gender critical feminists aren't feminists because they don't include trans people. And you've got the older school, and saying, like, if I'm an older school trans, then there's older school feminists. The older school feminists saying the younger feminists aren't feminists because they have included men in their feminism.
I think I'm the old school, but I'm only 34. How's that happened? What about,
we haven't answered the changing room question.
Okay, but I want to phrase it here. Okay, so you said, preface
it. I said there are three areas I would agree with GC on.
I think
prison,
changing rooms, you're going to say where it's, okay.
And then, prison,
so I want to preface the question.
And rape refuges.
Okay.
I'm pretty clear where I stand, and I stand fairly GC on that. Changing rooms and then toilets.
Okay, you know. So you said, let me preface the changing room question. You said, I am a trans person. Not a trans woman. And you said you are male. So why would you go in a woman's changing room?
Okay, the alternative is I go in a men's changing room and I now have D cup breasts and I have to wear a women's swimming costume.
That wouldn't be upsetting for other men, but it might be for you. And that's not, I'm not saying that's
an ideal
situation.
I've had men refuse to share a space with me. and men. So, you know.
Well, I think that's yeah, wrong.
You might say it's their problem. But but actually, again, people had great fun attacking me on Twitter for actually saying this. My biggest failure is not failure. My biggest weakness or something is the fact that I'm usually honest to my own detriment. So I said that I haven't been swimming in 10 years. I haven't used women's changing facilities for 10 years. Mm. And I went back because a lesbian friend actually invited me swimming and said, Katie, you should go swimming. I mean, I need to get my fitness up from zero to something because I'm now borderline diabetic. So therefore, I have got to do some fitness. But I said, therefore, if I go to a gym, if I go to a swimming pool, what changing facilities do I use? Actually, I went to one of the gyms that actually has a fairly strong GC policy, you know, the Ballantyne gym. I think he's come out as saying, you know, men use the men's, women use the women's, and trans use your birth sex sort of thing. But it was a woman who'd invited me to go swimming, and she said, you should come to the women's with me. I'm kind of insisting and inviting and welcoming you. But when we actually got there, she said, but I'd also rather have privacy within the women's because I also don't want to be on display to other women.
I don't like being on display to men.
Yeah. This comes to a really interesting conversation about bodies anyway, but very briefly, we ended up using the family cubicle within the women's because at times there are also like, where does a father take his daughter swimming? Where does a mother take her young son swimming? There are family facilities, etc. And the same applies to toilets. And Linda Bellos says to me often, she said, look, you know, if there's a single dad who's got his kids for the day and they're out and they use a public toilet, do you send your kids in and stand outside and hover and look dodgy? Do you go in with them or do you find a nice friendly looking woman to take them in or vice versa? Hmm. You know, that's why I'm saying there are some easy wet places where I can say, no, without question, anyone who is still male bodied in an intact sense, met anyone who has a history of sexual violence, they should be nowhere near a woman in prison. And there are now enough people identifying as trans in the prison system to form an entire prison. And there's already a wing at one prison, which is trans. And Italy considered a trans prison when they had 60 trans prisoners, I think it was, and California considered it. And I think they should do it. I think they should have a transgender prison.
You've got enough people, I suppose.
It would also put anyone who's doing it for the wrong reasons or get put off. Like, you mean I'm going to be lumped with all the other trans people as opposed to getting access to women? Well, then no, actually, yeah. I'm fine. I'm still a man. I also think you'd never be allowed to do it. But anyone who says they're trans in prison, you should offer them surgery tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It would put people off instantly for those who weren't doing it for the right reasons.
That's interesting.
Fast track them on Monday morning. It's fine. You identify as a woman. We'll sign you up for surgery at 2:00 Monday. Oh, no, I didn't mean that. You know, so it's a good test. It's a litmus test of do you really mean it? But this thing about bodies. I work for a Danish organization and I spend a lot of time around Scandinavians and they do not get what the issue is, most of them. Mm. Although I have sat down and had dinner with one of Denmark's leading gender criticals as well.
Yeah. And they're weirdos in Scandinavia.
Well, we would say they're weirdos because they're comfortable with things we're less comfortable with.
Yeah, I am joking, by the way. I just remembered this is YouTube and there will be
you've got an international audience
of Scandinavians. How dare you say, I have no problem with Scandinavians.
You're not Scandiphobic.
They are absolutely fine. It's a joke. Whatever Katie had said, I would have then said they're weirdos. I don't.
But this is interesting because the majority of these issues are happening in the English-speaking world. There's a little bit in Spain, but as I said, the first country to depathologize was Argentina. But you're talking about Australia, America, Britain being the main places where the GC argument's being held, mainly because many of the critics are writing in English, of course. And so it's an English language thing to a degree. It's the strongest place.
It's worth saying these are countries with a very strong feminism.
Strong feminism, also a strong trans movement, you might say. Yeah. But there are other countries where perhaps they're just get on with it and they seem to have less of an issue. And some of my friends in Scandinavia have said, well, we'd have less of an issue because we actually share facilities with men anyway. We're actually less hung up around bodies. Last time I was in Copenhagen, they were swimming in the main kind of rivery, lakey thing in the center of Copenhagen. And there were women just stripping to the no clothes and changing on the edge of the river in public. And I went to a bar and I asked where the toilet was. I went up to the toilet and there was one toilet. And it wasn't labeled gender neutral. Literally urinals and cubicles for everyone. And all the men and women were using it without thinking, without it being seen as a modern gender neutral toilet. Because Denmark, a lot of their buildings didn't have space for toilets. A lot of their buildings are quite old. And when they put toilets in or showers in and things like that, there was very little space. They think, I'll just shove them all together.
Yeah,
and they didn't think of it
Can I just respond to those ones? So with regards to Scandinavian Germany, these countries,
they do have all that.
They have a very different culture to us with respect to that.
Yeah.
Some would say it's more progressive. Some would say it's not quite right to put these people together, whatever. I'm not comfortable naked with a bunch of people. That's them. Then if we go to countries like Argentina, I lived in Argentina for 6 years.
Podemos continuar en español si quieres.
Podemos continuar. La gente no va a entender nada. But we can do that. But okay, the difference there is something you've actually said, you've alluded to, and I think you know this already, which is people in the UK, for example, we've lost a lot of support for trans over the last few years because of some of the demands being made by extreme ends of that community. That's not happening so much in Argentina because they're worrying about inflation and real problems. Yeah. Not that, you know, these are real problems for people here. We've gotten into a bit, we're in a place right now where, yes, there are loads of problems in the UK, but I do agree with what Constantine Kissing was saying the other day. It is one of the best countries in the world to live in. Argentina, I mean, having lived there, inflation through the roof, absolute poverty.
Yeah, but then going back to some of those surveys, and there's been some recent surveys, says what are the biggest problems in Britain today? And people say, you know, get rid of the current government, whatever. And, you know, they'll list all of these things, cost of living. And actually, it comes out, you know, what is an issue for people? And I think the last one I saw go around, 2% of people said transgender rights stuff.
Sure.
And that, you know, and probably 1% of them was the...
But it's still going to be higher. 1%. It's still going to be higher than Argentina.
Oh, yeah,
and I've had that conversation in Argentina where everyone around the table, very sort of middle class people, even people voting vaguely right wing, who you wouldn't expect to be, who are going like, oh, the trans, why are people transfer and all that? And I have to explain to them, but you know, in England, they're actually allowed into like women's prisons and they're actually doing these kind of, and they're shocked. And at that point, the support in Argentina dries up.
And this is
fast.
Where the recent surveys have said, they're not asking the same question as 2017. The questions they're now asking is, should trans people be allowed to do X, Y, and Z? And when they ask those questions, the support levels change and drop quite quickly. Sport changes really quickly. Prisons and refuges. And I think actually breaking it down is a very sensible idea. And that's why, I remember going on one episode of a TV interview and we actually ended up agreeing 100%, which surprised everyone and also makes for bad TV.
Yeah.
Because, and I've
argue actually, with me.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I've been dropped from interviews when I've told people my position.
Yeah.
Because they said, no, we'll find someone who's more extreme.
Yeah.
Because basically they want these two heads like that. I always say, if you're going to have an actual decent panel discussion,
boring,
get 5 people on.
Okay.
Always get 5 people on, because this represents society. You've got the kind of the two extremists who will literally go hammer and tongs. You've got moderates within either of those extreme camps. And then you've got the center ground who is undecided, the undecided or the moderate or the liberal or whatever you want to call them.
Do you want to controversial then?
Yeah.
Let's do this, because we've got to do that. Do you or did you get any kind of sexual kick out of presenting as a woman?
Not sexual, because I'm not a particularly sexual person. I've never had the testosterone that creates much of a sexual desire. So I would regard myself as asexual, zero interest in sex. Haven't had it for 8 or 9 years now, but have had relationships.
Who among us has? No, I'm joking.
I've been in relationships where people have been comfortable reasonably that I've not been interested in sex. They like good dinners and good conversations, and that was enough for some of them. Don't get me wrong, I love kissing and cuddling and holding hands, and I do a lot of that, but I think, you know, if we're going to the bedroom, I'm really not bothered unless it's to watch a movie.
Okay.
So, you know, that gets kind of that side out of the way. But was there a sexual... It's one of the questions that came up actually 18 odd years ago. It's like, I'm going to be blunt about this, like one of the questions was, do you masturbate when cross-dressed? And I go, oh, I suppose I occasionally masturbate, but it's such an effort, it's hardly worth it. And I guess, do I do it when cross-dressed? I guess I do, because I'm doing the self-ID where you have to live as a woman for 2 years anyway. So I guess, yes.
There must be some kick out of it.
What?
A little bit.
I think there probably was at one point, but if it was done as that, it was a phase, and phase is used to trans a lot. But I mean, it was a phase I got through very quickly. And beyond. But that's why most trans activists will say there's no such thing as AGP, autogynephilia. They would say autogynephilia is a made-up thing by one psychiatrist and it's been disproven. Then you ask them to do that and they can't necessarily.
Yeah.
I think AGP is a thing, but I do not think AGP, I think Julia Long says it, but every trans is AGP. I don't think AGP is true of everyone. I think under the so-called trans umbrella, there are multitudes of issues. There are many reasons. And that's why I think you can't just have the gender critical versus trans position just considering the problem is trans women, because the question of trans men, girls who think that they are a trans man or whatever, their argument against them is different. This is the standard phrase is, this is girls cutting off healthy breasts, and that's the issue. And basically, they're all lesbians, and you know, and they're all being pushed to be a trans man because the word lesbian has got such a bad rap, and they're not comfortable being a lesbian. Actually, they've got internalized homophobia. They've got religious parents who don't want them to be gay, so they'd rather they were trans, which I think is mostly a nonsense. There
happens
are a few
in
exceptions.
Pakistan,
yeah,
India.
No, well, in Iran particularly, which does the second largest number of trans ops in the world,
can't be gay.
Yeah, exactly. So. You've got to draw straws. One of you's going to have to choose to be the woman, otherwise you're both going to get your heads chopped off, sort of thing. Yeah. If that's the choice, then one of you might opt for the in the name of love to stay together, but actually to change your sex. So I think it's rare. It's not the issue in the main in Britain. It's a mind that is the religious kind of can't accept myself as gay. I said to people, even my own psychiatrist, God, I wish I was gay. It'd be so much easier than being trans.
Yes.
I would rather have been gay.
Well, gay makes more sense to people who are not gay or trans. Okay, well, I fancy a man. Do you? Well, look, I'm literally fucking him. Of course I do. You know, whereas I am now a woman. Well, well hang on a minute. So, but it's interesting that you say that you went through a phase of AGP, a little bit of that.
I'm comfortable with that phrase. Are you attracted? So autogynephilia, you might say, spell it out, is the, are you attracted to the idea of yourself as a woman?
But can I just say that coincided with when you did used to say trans women are women? That's when you were most fervent in your ideology. So it is possible there is a correlation between AGP, an attraction to the presenting as a sexual, as a different sex, and fervent trans ideology.
Yeah, but you can see the way I dress now is clearly not getting a kick out of wearing a sweater.
But now you call yourself a trans person who's
but
male.
But the other people can't let go of the idea that all trans people are AGP perverts or whatever, to the point where I'm wearing exactly the same clothes
what if it's
as I wore
that?
2 weeks ago, and I was told I was in full fetish gear.
No, but that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. But what if it's not that, and it's actually all fervent adherence of the trans ideology, or not all, never all, but a good proportion of them might have some form of AGP. In which case,
I think the AGP side actually is a red herring around teenage people who think they're trans. I think it's very, for many of them anyway, I think it's the AGP side was far stronger in the older school trans, actually, than the newer. And I think a lot of people, I think it's more important to ask the question, why are 25 to 50% of people going through the trans clinics autistic or other neurodivergence? I think that's a more important cause, along with alleged social contagion and certainly access to inspiration or education or persuasion or whatever you want to call it via social media. Obviously, you can find out stuff instantly. When I came out as trans, it was, you know, when I first thought I was kind of trans as an adult back when I was 18, 19, and then in the end did nothing about it, there was no internet because I went to university before the internet. So there wasn't anywhere to find out this stuff. And I thought I was the only trans person in my entire hometown. And I never came out because I thought, who wants to come out and be the weirdo in that sense at the time? There's a big difference now. And now typically you may find a school class with, say, 30 kids in it, and there might be two or three trans in it, which is a massive disproportionate thing compared to 10, 20, 30, 40
years ago. Social contagion?
I think there's a degree to which, how do I phrase this? Whatever I say will be wrong. Anyway, how do I want to phrase it is there's a degree of it being, let's forget gender ideology as language here, but gender theory and maybe gender choice. And I think more young people are considering it a choice rather than a necessity. And they've been, and the era I went through was, for me, transition was a necessity to get rid of gender dysphoria. And I can actually say that surgical transition got rid of gender dysphoria. I have zero gender dysphoria left. And actually passing as a woman, being accepted as a woman is irrelevant to my gender dysphoria going. It was actually the surgery made the difference. Whether that was the last nail in the coffin to hormones, I don't know what it is, but it worked. And I say to people, I felt like having, look, the lobotomy worked, you know, but the lobotomy came from the botomy and not from somewhere else.
Katie, where can people find your work or go follow you? I've got one more question after.
KatieJohn.com is my website. at Katie John or at Katie John Went is me on social media. You find occasionally I lock my Katie John Twitter account after I've had a few too many pylons. I always unlock it again a few days later. I just need a little bit of space. I'm always open to debate. I'd rather it was respectful and friendly, but I also believe in people's rights to say what they like. I just don't have to always listen to it. And I'm always open to change my mind.
Who's a heretic you admire?
Who's a heretic? Well, I actually do admire Helen Joyce because she's very respectful in engagement. Who's a heretic I admire? Well, actually, even on the trans side, going back a number of years, Kate Bornstein, who wrote a book called Gender Outlaw, because she had...
Scientologist?
I don't know. I think she was a playwright.
Unless I'm getting it wrong, and forgive me everyone if I am.
But Kate Bornstein went from transitioning from male to female surgically, but came around from the op and said, well, I can tell you I'm no longer a man, but I can't tell you what the F I am. And actually now identifies many, many years later as kind of non-binary, you know, classic kind of Judith Butler kind of thing now. And I actually think,
She was a scientist. Really?
I did not know that. I knew they were Jewish though.
Can't be both. Tom Cruise says you can be both, but you can't. You're one or the other. You're binary. You're either
I was going to say something about non-binary, actually, because I think the thing, and if someone says to me, how do you identify, Katie? I say as a person, you know, what pronouns you use. I go, they, she, he, in that order. I'm really not that bothered unless you're trying to shout in my face with capital letters just to try and upset me. Mm. And then, you know, but I don't take offense if I get misgendered. That's not an issue. And I think non-binary is a new way of saying feminism for some young people. And the number of people who have in their profiles pronouns she, they, or he, they, I don't necessarily think they're all non-binary or all trans. I think for some people, that is a kind of a feminist statement of saying, I'm opting out of gender.
Yeah, I think it's attention-seeking and arrogant because they think the rest of us just adhere.
We're boring.
No. Yeah, that's it. They think I'm just man.
But there is a rejection of even the LGBT vocabulary of old. They say, hey, you know, LGBT, you only had 4 options. You know, we want 300 options. Yeah. All you have to go is 10 years ago, even, all you have to do is go on Tumblr. There was a Mogai Tumblr, Minority Orientations, Gender and Intersex or something it stood for. And they had 300 flags for genders and sexualities.
Right, done with it.
And now they've got flags for everything.
Yeah.
And I think it's creative.
It's not. It's a lack of creativity. So you've got to pretend you're interesting in some other way. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about non-binary. So you've got to say, I opt out of gender. No, I'm because they think I'm just man and I'm that boring. And I actually have many feminine or stereotypical.
You're sounding like an incel aspect. Now,
no, well, I'm the opposite. I'm very
boring.
I'm saying I'm not boring. I'm interesting and different. And everyone I know has a bit of this and a bit of that.
Yeah.
And to opt out of gender, I'm not having it. But I respect what you're saying. Thank you, Katie John Went. Hope you're doing good wherever you are today. Hope you don't get too much shit from everyone after this episode. I hope I don't, but I've gotten a bit used to it and it's fine. It is what it is. And I don't want Katie to get that kind of thing. If you liked what she was saying or he was saying or they were saying, what Katie was saying, go over to Katie John Went on Twitter and all that and have a little follow, say hello. Be kind, be nice. Don't be kind in like the sort of woke way, which means be horrible. I mean, just remember that people are human beings and they have feelings and there are ways to get your point across. No matter what the point is, you've got a right to believe in it, but there are ways to get it across that cause the least suffering possible in the other person. And I think that's something we can all strive for. Please share this episode around. Sign up to my Locals or Patreon. Locals is andrewgold.locals.com. We often put like a 5-10 minute bonus segment on there. And I'll see you around for the next episode.